Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us this evening Mr. D. Wampler, and he's an attorney in Missouri. We're going to be talking about a book he's written called The Myth of Separation Between Church and State. Mr. Wampler, thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Doctor. I appreciate being on your program this evening.
Well, I think it's really a beautiful book, a beautiful picture, beautiful quality, and of course it really has so much information just about this this issue. And of course, I think anybody who read this book, they'd realize that the idea that there's a myth of separation between church and state is just that, it's a myth. Now, if the separation of church and state is not in the Constitution, where did that idea originate?
Well, they've studied thousands and thousands of documents of our founding fathers, and we count nearly 300 different founding fathers that came and went in the period of time when our documents were being prepared and the votes were being taken and the Constitution was being debated and written. And the so-called doctrine of separation of church and state never surfaced. There's only one or two isolated instances in some 25,000 papers, letters, and so forth of our founding fathers where the term separation of church and state ever was seen. In 1802, January of 1802, Jefferson wrote a letter to the Danbury Baptists, and he mentioned the doctrine of separation of church and state, that we must have a wall between church and state. And that letter was just laying there gathering dust until 1947, when Justice Black, in a case before the U.S. Supreme Court, Everson versus Board of Education, it was put in a court opinion, and it was for some reason just assumed at that time that there was a separation between church and state and that this was a large wall. And that lingered until 1983. So from 1947 to 1983, the ACLU was able to do a lot of damage with some of the various lawsuits that were filed. And in 1983, the U.S. Supreme Court put a stake in the heart of the strict separationists in a case called Lynch versus Donnelly, in which they said the doctrine of separation of church and state is a useful metaphor, but it is not at all what exists in our country today. And in fact, there must be a close accommodation between church and state. So I bristle every time I hear someone say, oh, you've got to have a separation of church and state. That's not the law. It never really has been the law, and it's not the law now.
Well, of course, wasn't it that when Jefferson wrote that letter to the ministers in Danbury, Connecticut, that he was basically saying the federal government would not have anything to do with controlling religion, rather than religion would not impact on the federal government?
Oh, absolutely. In the First Amendment, if you want to read it black on white, ink on paper, it says that Congress shall make no law regarding the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. And they meant what they said. They weren't playing with words. They said Congress. So what they were saying was, we don't want a national church in the United States. No one supports that idea. But then the founding fathers, after they voted on that, saying we don't want a national church, they went to their respective colonies, their respective states, and most all of the states had a state religion. So they never felt and never thought that there would be a strict separation between government and religion. They merely said we don't want a national religion, if you look exactly at what they said and what they meant.
Well, now, wasn't it that many state constitutions required people to profess a belief in the lordship of Jesus Christ before they could even be elected as government officials at the state level?
Many did. If you want to go back and look at the actual history, which our young people are being denied today, they're being taught revisionist history because it's much more tolerant and diverse, and but if you look at all of the state constitutions, every single preamble and every single constitution of every state of the Union, when those states were formed and came into the Union, and in fact most of them today still either refer to God or Jesus Christ. I don't know about the California Constitution, but I know certainly the constitution and preamble of my state still has the ruler of the universe in the words in the laws. And so, you know, we've been fed a bill of goods today. It's being crammed down our throats. And if you tell a lie enough, we've learned in history, then some people will begin to believe it. And many congressmen, many leaders today believe that the doctrine of separation of church and state is in the Constitution, or that it's in the Bill of Rights, and it isn't. Never has been.
And I really think that's really so important to realize that this is all contrived, but there seems to be an organized, concerted effort to convince us of something that isn't true. And I've talked to very well-educated, intelligent people. When you ask them where in the Constitution that separation of church and state is, why, they'll tell you it's in the First Amendment. And then you ask them what the First Amendment says, and they have no idea. That's the great tragedy. At one time, people could quote large parts of the Constitution like they could quote the Bible, but not today, tragically.
Well, our founding fathers, we should be very proud of them. They weren't perfect, but they knew that virtues would be essential to the success of America. But I'm afraid today that we've lost our moral compass, and Christians are now suffering from the sin of silence. We're sending our children to public schools. We're buying in to the school books. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. If you can go to a public school in your section of the country, and if you can find me a public school book, a history book, that quotes the farewell address of George Washington, where Washington said that religion and morality are the two indispensable supports of this nation, and in vain would that man claim the tribute of patriotism should labor to subvert those great pillars of human happiness. If you can find me a history book in the schools, I'll personally donate $100 to the charity of your choice, because you can't find it, because that's been excised out and taken out of our history books. In other words, it's not politically correct today to remind ourselves that our first president of the United States said you were basically a traitor if you didn't believe that religion and morality were the two indispensable supports of our nation. You can't claim the tribute of patriotism if you don't believe that. But you will not find that in any school books today.
Well, you know, it's what you've done in your book. The book is really beautifully done, the beautiful paper, beautiful pictures, and then, of course, the statements by so many of our founding fathers, or by a president with their picture of the president right next to it. And some of my favorite quotations, like that wonderful one from Jefferson, who talks about God who gave us life, gave us liberty, but can the liberties of a nation be secure when we have removed a conviction that these liberties are the gifts of God? Indeed, I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, and his justice cannot sleep forever. And really, this is a book I'm going to keep right next to where I work, simply because you've got it in bold print, and as I get a little older, I have difficulty reading some of the small things, but you've taken so many of the most important of the quotations and put them there, really where they hopefully will become indelibly recorded in the minds and hearts of the people who get your book. And incidentally, the book is entitled The Myth of Separation Between Church and State by D. Wempler. And we are actually carrying that to Radio Liberty. We think it's an important book. Now, do you think that the founding fathers of this country in any way ever intended that God would be removed from all aspects of our government?
Oh, absolutely not. They would definitely turn over in their graves if they knew what was happening today. You can look at what they said and what they wrote. Every single founding father, you mentioned the presidents a minute ago, every single president of the United States, every single one has mentioned and referred to their deep faith in God and have prayed in public and have declared national days of prayer. Presidents since Abraham Lincoln have done that. And every single president that was sworn in has placed his hand on the Holy Bible and sworn under oath Almighty God and swearing to uphold the laws of this country. Every single one, without exception. And if you will look at everything that the Founding Fathers said, there was a big study a few years ago of 15,000 documents at the University of Houston. And they looked at Blackstone and Montesquieu and the different writers, and they determined that the vast majority of all of the quotes and thoughts of our founding fathers came directly or indirectly from the Bible, if you look at all of the quotes and the things that they relied on. And it is just absolutely amazing how far downhill we've gone. We've kicked God out of the classroom and put condoms in, and the day we did that, we started down the path to hell.
Why did this happen? That's the question. Why did the Supreme Court decide that we should take God out of our schools? Why have the subsequent Supreme Courts gone along with this whole idea of really removing God from the classrooms when their own sessions, every day when the Supreme Court opens, the crier comes in and says, God save the United States, and this illustrious court, or words to that effect, and so this honorable court. So why, if their own sessions start with the mention of God, why would the Supreme Court justices want to take mention of God away from our children?
Over the years, we've allowed a number of liberal judges who, instead of really interpreting the law and trying to determine what the Founding Fathers thought when they wrote the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, have tried to legislate on their own and tried to make law. And, you know, all politics is local. We haven't elected enough good people locally, and then we haven't elected enough congressmen and senators that believe the way that many of us believe. And as a result, we're suffering from the sin of silence today. People of faith are sitting back. They're not getting involved in politics. They think it's beneath them. And as a result, we've turned it over to whoever is left. And you know whoever is left. It's just the people that are not the people of faith, people that don't believe the way we do. And it's a shame that many of these cases were 5-4 and 6-3. And once these justices get in, well, they're in for life. And you can't get them out. So we suffer. Justice Ginsburg, for instance, we were sold a bill of goods when she was up for nomination. We were told she was a moderate. And I believe she's from the state of California, and I believe I'm correct in saying she was the general counsel for the ACLU in that state, very high up in that organization. But, you know, we were told that she was a moderate. Well, we should have known better.
We should have told the same thing about David Souter as well.
That's right. I'm still simmering over that.
Well, what was Blackstone? Who was Blackstone? Why is he important in any discussion as we begin looking into the background of this so-called wall of separation that is really destroying the moral foundation of our society?
I don't expect anybody to read Blackstone now. Back in the 1700s, he was the most famous jurist and writer of codifying the common law in England. And when folks moved to the United States and began to settle here. Well, we didn't have our own law book, so we studied books from England. Blackstone's commentaries on the law, written in several volumes, some of it in somewhat older English, were the main law books that started our nation. Our nation started from the Ten Commandments and the Bible, and eventually other jurists and writers wrote books and put that in the law. Abraham Lincoln, for instance, read one law book to pass the bar in Illinois and become an attorney. He read Blackstone's Commentaries on the Law. He worked by day and studied Blackstone by night, by candlelight. And that's how he took the bar examination. And it was just a very famous series of law books in which Blackstone, over and over again, on more pages than I can count, refers to God and nature's God, and that God is the source of all of our laws, over and over again. And I'm afraid we've come very far from that. If we put those in our laws today, I'm afraid we'd have lawsuits challenging. You know, the very first document ever signed in the United States was the Mayflower Compact back in around 1620. And that Mayflower Compact was signed by the Founding Fathers before they got off one of the ships. And that compact began with the words, "In the name of God, amen." I mean, can you think of any law today that would ever pass constitutional muster that had the beginning, "In the name of God, amen"? I don't think that it would pass today.
Well, I'll tell you, if we don't get back to our religious foundations, we're going to lose America, because America, different than any other nation, ascribed its freedoms as coming from God, and the governments were instituted among men to preserve those God-given rights. And that was the very basic statement of the Declaration of Independence. That's why we had a government, was to preserve those God-given rights, those so-called unalienable rights.
In our schools, in our state, some of our local schools, they're prohibited from using the words Thanksgiving or Christmas or Easter, because it's not politically correct, because it refers to religious holidays. I mean, can you imagine in the United States of America, a nation that was founded as a Christian nation originally, and look at all of our laws and hundreds of our documents and our monuments that to this day have God and Jesus chiseled in them, and yet in many of our school districts you can't have, they don't call it Thanksgiving or Christmas just because it's not politically correct, because they're afraid that that's establishing a church by doing that.
Well,
it's the most ridiculous interpretation I've ever heard of.
Somebody once said, you know, a child cannot read a Bible in school, but it's all right for a prisoner to read a Bible in prison. Maybe there's a lot of clarity and a lot of wisdom in that, because if you don't have the Bible as your foundation in school, why, you may very well end up in prison. It is this fear of God and this concept of right and wrong that keeps people from doing wrong and ending up in prison. But you can read a Bible in prison, you just can't read it in a government school. But
that's,
you
right,
can read it in a government prison.
People need to get involved today. People that hear my voice, you know, Plato said the penalty that good men pay for not being interested in politics is to be governed by men worse than themselves. And that's exactly what's going on today. There's some folks that are listening that probably pray and don't take action, and then there's others that take action and don't pray. We need to do both. We need to pray, and we need to take action.
All right. Well, who is de Tocqueville, and why is Alexis de Tocqueville important in our story of America?
Well, there again, this was a Frenchman who came to the United States and began to write about our history and what made our nation great. He lived from 1805 to 1859. And he wrote a book around 1835 and 1840 called Democracy in America. And he was just causing a study to be made, and he was just impressed with the Christian religion and the influence that it had over the souls of men in America. And he saw at that time that we were the most enlightened and free nation on the earth. And it was powerfully done because we were under the great unity of Christianity.
Amen to that. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Dee Wempler. We'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. The book, The Myth of Separation of Church and State, available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because Christianity is under attack today. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dee Wampler, and we're talking about his book, The Myth of Separation Between Church and State. And while some of our listeners are taking a break, we're going to continue our conversation. They'll be back with us here in about 4 minutes' time. And, of course, the book is really great because the quotations are there, they're simple, and yet it's important that you have this information. There's so much other information going into the entire background, really, of the Christian concepts of our nation. What was this so-called lemon test that they talk about?
Well, over the years, the U.S. Supreme Court has attempted to come up with different tests to try to determine whether or not a law offends against the Constitution. And they look at the free exercise of the religion clause of the First Amendment and the establishment clause. And the court has tried to come up with man's law to look to see who the parties are, what the forum is. In other words, is it a public forum or a non-public type of forum, a public meeting or private meeting? And then to attempt to identify the type of restraint that is being considered in the law. I know I'm being somewhat legalistic about this, but they look and apply the test to see whether the law has a secular purpose or not. Is there some good reason why we should have the law? Does it serve some other purpose? And the government can't promote, endorse, or inhibit religion, and they can't be an excessive entanglement. So, you know, it's a very detailed legal test. It would be kind of like giving school books to Catholic schools or giving lunches or school milk program, let's say, to parochial schools or private Christian schools. That the court has to try to derive a test to determine whether a law giving school lunches and milk to private Christian schools, does that establish a church? Is that law unconstitutional? And so they try to apply this complicated test to each law to try to determine that. Well, obviously, if it's school lunch or milk, the children have to eat, doesn't matter where they go to school, and it helps the children grow and helps children that can't afford these things. So the primary purpose is to feed the children, not to establish a church. So the courts have said that that's all right. Whereas, you know, if you take a different law and say you're going to mandate school prayer or mandate posting the Ten Commandments, they say that that's illegal and that entangles government with religion and promotes a particular religious belief, so the courts don't allow that. And that's what the lemon test is.
Well, certainly, initially, though, in our schools, God and mention of God and our religious holidays and Christmas and Easter were an important part of our education because we were acknowledged by our courts to be a Christian nation. Up until 50 years ago, everybody in the world knew America was a Christian nation, as they know that Israel is a Jewish nation, and certainly Pakistan was a Muslim nation, or at least shortly after that it became a Muslim nation separated from India. But everybody knew America was a Christian nation, but that's no longer true, is it?
You can't sing Away in a Manger or Silent Night, Holy Night in school. You can sing Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. But, you know, the traditional songs that we sing at Christmas time and the school.
Hold that thought for just a moment when our stations join us. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Dee Wampler, who's an attorney from Missouri, and he's written a wonderful book about the myth of separation between church and state. And so if you'd like to give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8299. Go right ahead, Mr. Wampler. Didn't mean to interrupt you there.
Well, I mean, if you start looking at all of our... Let me go back and take another run at it here. If you look at the diaries of Christopher Columbus, if you look at all of our original laws, if you look at our... the Declaration of Independence mentions God four times. The Liberty Bell has Leviticus 25:10 inscribed on it. We have a portrait of Moses above the speaker's chair in Congress, Library of Congress. We have all sorts of religious paintings. The Lincoln Memorial has judgments of the Lord are righteous on it. The tomb of the unknown soldier has chiseled on it, known but to God. You mentioned the U.S. Supreme Court opens with God save the United States in this honorable court. You look at the Washington Monument, praise be to God, inscribed on it. And, you know, here's a good one. Even at the bottom of the U.S. Constitution, there's a reference to Jesus. There's been books written that God is not in the Constitution. Those books are false because at the bottom of the Constitution it says it was signed in 1787 in the year of our Lord. Now, who do you think they were referring to that was born 1787 years earlier? It must be Jesus. And we have all of these National Day of Prayer. We have Thanksgiving, Christmas, and all of these, just hundreds of things. I mean, our national motto is inscribed in every single coin. There isn't one coin in your pocket or in your billfold that doesn't have "In God We Trust" on it, which is our national motto. It's been that way now since 1863. So for anybody that says there is a total separation or a high wall of separation between church and state, they don't know what they're talking about. They're totally have not read and studied American history.
Or maybe they have studied it and they just don't want you to know about it. But the thing is that there are people within the legislature today who are trying to limit what the courts can do as far as interfering in the rights of the school boards and the rights of local communities and of states to acknowledge God. Aren't they trying to limit the power of the Supreme Court in that venue?
Well, absolutely. As I said a minute ago, I mean, it's a shame that even student-led prayer is being struck down and disallowed. And the singing of traditional Christmas carols, even in our schools here in this area, and it's a shame because the town that I live in, for instance, is the national headquarters of the Assemblies of God Church. So you'd think, you know, we'd have a strong movement here to have the Christian influence in our schools, but we're prohibited even from having Christmas trees and Christmas decorations on the ridiculous belief that it is going to establish a church. I mean, have you ever heard of anything so ridiculous in all of your life? Just bending over backwards to accommodate one person that might object, if one person is offended, well, then many of our courts are saying, well, if one person is offended, well, then we can't have that. So we strictly have to take away the rights of everyone to have a Christmas tree or everyone to have to sing Christmas carols.
But, of course, that is really such a ridiculous argument because many people are offended by the sex education in our schools, and yet nobody ever suggests that this hedonistic teaching of our children and destruction of their modesty and promoting immorality, that's perfectly all right, and yet many people are offended by that. Why is it simply the mention of Jesus Christ and of God is offensive, and that can be outlawed, but not the other things which do offend others? It seems that we don't have a very level playing field, do we?
You're exactly correct. Many of our schools today, beginning in the elementary classes, have movies such as My Family, Your Family, which is a movie that basically a very, very slick production that promotes lesbianism and homosexuality. And those movies are shown and teachings like that in our schools, and we get all kinds of objections of parents around the country. But things like that are shown even though it's offensive to our faith, yet anyone that mentions God or Jesus, well then, they're not allowed to do so. So it's a double standard.
Well, I sometimes think we live in a world gone crazy, and other times I'm absolutely certain we do. Well, when we get back here, we'll certainly welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Now, people may get tired of hearing this subject, but I think it is so seminal, it's foundational, it's basic to an understanding of what's going on in America today. So we do hope that you'll give us a call if you agree or disagree. If you have any questions, why, D. Wampler, this is his field. Give us a call. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and certainly our guest today is D. Wampler. We're talking about his book, The Myth of Separation Between Church and State. And let me just suggest that I think this is a beautifully done book, and that's why we're going to be carrying it here at Radio Liberty. And it gives you so many of the references that you need to have, and you need to go over them again and again and again. Well, there are a number of things that we certainly should be talking about. Was the removal of God from our government and the society a gradual process, and how did we get so far from the very foundations upon which this country was based, and that was one nation under God? How did we get from where we were to where we are?
Gradually, apparently, we've come down the slippery slope. The issue of religious freedom in our schools and in our public square, in my opinion, is a battle for the heart and soul of America. Because as religion goes, so goes America. And I think our country needs to be reminded of the things that made us great, of our faith in God, of our founding fathers that came here to spread the advancement of the Christian faith, that said that they were mere stepping stones. They realized they wouldn't be living long. And as we've been reminded with President Reagan's famous speeches that he gave over and over again, quoting John Winthrop in November of 1620, "We shall be as a city upon a hill. The eyes of the people are upon us. And that if we deal falsely with our God in this work that we have undertaken, it will cause him to withdraw his present help from us, and we shall be made a story and a byword throughout the world." So this is a powerful image, this city on a hill, that we've heard over and over again the last several weeks that President Reagan addressed so many times. And this was from John Winthrop, who wrote these words in November of 1620. And, of course, when all of the settlers landed, every one of them, they knelt and prayed and planted a cross. It was the first thing that they did. But just think about this just a minute. If we deal falsely with our God, and if we withdraw from him, he will withdraw his help from us, and our country will then just be made a byword throughout the world. William Bradford, the governor of the Plymouth Colony in 1607, said to remember that we are just stepping stones to others in the performance of so great a work. And we have to push on, even though, you know, we're going to lose battles. There's no question about it that we're going to have to arm ourselves. And
hold that thought for just a moment as our stations are preparing. There we are. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is D. Wampler. And the thing is that America was founded as a Christian nation. Everybody knew it was a Christian nation. And this is really why I believe God blessed this country. But there have always been those who would destroy the Christian foundations of our nation. They're doing a pretty good job of it today, to the fact where most people do not understand anything about our heritage. They don't understand what our founding fathers said. And they certainly don't understand that the Supreme Court has held that America was a Christian nation. Would you like to talk a little bit about that, that Supreme Court decision, I think it was 1891 or 92, the United States versus the Church of the Holy Trinity?
Well, I'll tell you, if you gave a public speech today and you said that America is a Christian nation, oh, just think of all the letters to the editor, the people that will call in and complain. But that's what the U.S. Supreme Court held in the Holy Trinity case, and that was just 100 years ago. And, you know, ours is apparently a country today that we have abandoned our own heritage. I mean, it is amazing that I debate the ACLU and other radical left-wing liberal groups from time to time. If I can just get them on the same page, if I can at least get them to agree upon our history, and you can quote over and over and over again our founding fathers, and they'll tell you that our founding fathers were deists. They were all deists. Well, that's not true at all. Possibly two of them, maybe three were. And, you know, I looked at the last wills and testaments of Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson. I don't know how many have ever taken the time to look at their last words last speeches that they wrote and last letters and in their last wills and testament. And both of them profess to be Christians and followers of Jesus Christ. Yet you'll hear over and over and over again that Jefferson and Franklin were deists and they didn't really believe in Jesus Christ. But again, we're hearing silence today, the sound of non-involvement. I mean, we're not teaching our children. We're not educating them about our nation's history.
Amen to that. Well, let's go to John, who's calling us of all places from Yakima, Washington. Hi, John. How are you doing?
Hey, Dr. Stan. I haven't talked to you in a long time.
Good to have you back. Do you have a question or comment?
I've been listening to you a couple of years. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you're doing fine.
Okay, I just wanted to mention something. You mentioned about, your guest mentioned about Washington's farewell address, if it was mentioned in any, I guess, secular history books?
No, in textbooks. It was a school textbook that was used in the school as a textbook.
Okay, well, this is what I have. It's called The Enduring Vision, A History of the American People. And on page 102 in that book, it's got a mentioning of Washington's farewell address.
But does it have it reprinted there? And this is something that's used in public schools. I think the offer is really for a public school textbook that contains Washington's complete text of his farewell address, which is really beautiful.
Yeah. No, it doesn't.
Okay.
No, what I'm saying is his speech is one of the greatest speeches ever given next to Lincoln's Gettysburg Address and Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. But that particular, I know the books mention George Washington and what he did. And what I'm saying is those parts of his speech where he talked about religion being an indispensable support of our nation and that you're not a true patriot if you don't accept that, that's not in the book that you've quoted.
I got you. Yeah, it's not in there. Okay. I was paging through and I wanted to check that out and, pass it on.
Okay, thanks, Ray. You're not going to get the $100. God bless. Thanks so much for calling, John. Bye-bye. And our telephone number, again, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, of course, this is exactly what you do. You simply remove certain things from our textbooks. You remove it from the discussion. It's never mentioned by the major media. It's never mentioned by the teachers. And pretty soon, people forget our history. Now, I don't believe this is happening by accident. People believe that there are people who have a different agenda. They have a different worldview. And, of course, they've used they have a lot of money, they have a lot of power, and they're using that power to change America from a Christian nation to a secular nation. And then, of course, the next step is to embracing a different sort of religion, which is my fear. They were rapidly moving in that direction. So, if you're out there, you have a question or comment, again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And I certainly agree with our guest, T. Wampler, that if we don't return to our Christian roots, then we will lose God's blessing for this country. And wasn't it that really everybody up until 50 years ago realized that our great prosperity and certainly our the advantages of living in America was related to God's blessing on this country?
Oh, absolutely. And they said it, and they said it without criticism. Everyone accepted it as fact. And now, if you want to really turn people off in any conversation, either private or public, if you'll mention God, you're probably on safe ground. If you mention Jesus Christ, people are going to look at you and say, "Don't cram your religion down my throat. Don't bring your religion to me. I'll believe what I want to believe." Justice Scalia said, who's a justice on the U.S. Supreme Court, said a few years ago, "We are fools for Christ's sake, and Christians must pray for courage to endure the scorn of the sophisticated world." And that is very true. You are going to be criticized. And, if you don't take a stand, if you don't stand for something, as the old country song says, you'll fall for anything. And we're told in Genesis to subdue the earth, in James 1:22 to be a soldier for Christ, and in 2 Chronicles 20 to take a position, stand still, and see the deliverance of the Lord who is with you, and fear not. And that's exactly what I say. I say, God bless America. Let's return to our roots. Let's read our history. Let's see what made our nation great. It was the traditional, scriptural American family unit that attended church with the mother and the father in the home, that gave the discipline and the guidance and the nurturing. That's what made our nation great. And unfortunately, I'm afraid we're getting away from that today.
I think you're absolutely right, and it's terrible what we've done, you know, to our society, and we've allowed it to happen, and it's all so often in the name of the government interfering in the lives of the people. I was just reading what Bill Cosby had said, addressing the NAACP, and of course he wasn't talking so much about the religious aspects, but he was saying that what's fate has befallen the black family, where 70% of the children are born out of wedlock, and that certainly the majority of these children will never have a father. And he mentioned that you have a woman with 8 children, every one by a different father. And he said, don't blame this on the white man. I mean, this is the fault of the black community, and we've got to quit blaming others and get back, you know, to the foundation that once the black community was a very stable part of our society. But of course, what's really people have forgotten is that 50 years ago, the black community was based upon God and a belief in God. And as we began to erode that and change that structure and then reward people for putting, you know, not having a husband in the family, we give them the welfare, and if there's a husband there, why, you lose your welfare. And we destroyed this, but of course, in large part, they were destroyed because they turned their back on the religious beliefs that once had held the black family together.
That's exactly right. I believe President Kennedy said that a rising tide lifts all boats, and I think of that a lot. I think if we can recapture the hardness and the discipline in our everyday life, that no matter what your job is, I don't care if you're a bricklayer, you sweep the streets, whether you're a middle-income person, whether you're a professional person, if you try to live a better life and lead a better life and make an influence positively in someone else's life, I wish they could hopefully put on my tombstone that I made a difference in someone's life, that I changed life and made someone's life a little better. The real issue today is not so much the separation of church and state, although that's what my book is about. I mean, I just got sick and tired of hearing about the strict separation of church and state. I couldn't stand it anymore, and as a trial lawyer, I decided to research the history and take pictures of all of our monuments and our legal documents and prove that there was not a separation. But the real issue here is not the separation of church and state, but it's society today separating the church from the state. It's where we can't publicly acknowledge God or Jesus Christ anymore, where we're actually disenfranchising the church. And it seems it's okay for the government to get involved in delicate moral issues of the day. But it's not okay for the church and for people of faith to get involved in political issues. We're divorcing ourselves from religious truth, and we're divorcing ourselves from our deepest conscience. I've said a lot here, but you can tell that I'm an activist. And if I see something I don't like, I write a letter, I call talk radio, I demand proof. I try to hold people accountable for what they say. And I think as Christians, we also need to complement and reinforce and encourage each other. If you see a congressman or a senator or a representative or someone on the school board or anyone that takes a stand for moral decency, you need to write those public officials and compliment them and say good things about them and get your friends and neighbors to do so. I used to be prosecuting attorney here in this county, and I can tell you that if I would get 3 or 4 letters on some particular issue, I knew that I'd hit a hot button. And I'd better watch what I'm doing, or it encouraged me to go forth and do something else. But these public officials, and they need to hear from people of faith. And So we not only just need to criticize and be against, but we also need to reinforce each other and support each other when we do things that we know is the correct thing to do.
And the other thing is, of course, that the good people have to be willing to contribute to the campaigns of Christians who are running for office. And I don't want simply people, you know, who use Christianity, but I want the people who believe in Christianity and their life demonstrates that, and they're running for political office not because they want personal aggrandizement or power, but because they want to limit the power of government. And they realize that our Constitution was a restrictive covenant placed upon the power of government over the lives of the people. And as Jefferson had said so well, you know, in matters of politics, speak not to be of confidence in men, but rather bind them down from mischief with the chains of the Constitution. Well, I think they're taking the chains off of the politicians, and they're forging them for the populace. And it's going to continue unless there are enough people who have the courage to stand up. And it isn't popular to stand up. It isn't popular to do what you do, Dee, or what I do 5 hours a day. But at least, you know, we have an opportunity to reach people all across America. And I think it's so wonderful that you were willing to put together this beautiful, beautiful book. It's called The Myth of Separation Between Church and State, and you did a great job on that. What sort of response have you gotten as you've talked about this on programs across America?
It is amazing. I've written several books on law, and those books are moderately received. And then I've written several books on the trial of Christ. My book is The Trial of Christ, A Criminal Lawyer Defends Jesus. And that's received quite a bit of publicity. And this book is the one that people are purchasing for their children, for homeschoolers, people that want to defend the faith, people that want to know what was our history. I mean, it's been so long since we've taken history and civics classes, many of us in school, and those of us that did take the classes, we were taught revisionist history, and many of us really have forgotten or didn't know about our Christian history, and they don't understand the Christian influence that made this nation so great, that caused it to change. And so that's what I say. I wrote the book. I just said enough was enough. I've had it, and the response has been absolutely tremendous because people want to know. And whether you agree or disagree with me in anything that I've said this evening, you can look at this book and look at our monuments and look at our laws, and you will see that they were formed and written by godly men, Christians who believed in the gospel of Jesus Christ, men that believed in prayer and leading their families in worship, and that's how this nation was founded. And you may disagree with me, but I can't see how you're going to disagree with the facts of our American history.
And, of course, America is a great nation because America at one time was a good nation. But as we turn further and further away from our Christian heritage, then, of course, we end up with things like we see at Abu Ghraib, a prison over there in Iraq. And well, why should we be surprised if there is no moral foundation, if there is no God, if there is no right, there is no wrong? These young people that we saw committing these horrible, horrible acts were raised in schools in America. And, of course, where there is no right and wrong, everybody determines what's right and wrong on their own. And, of course, you can say, well, we were ordered to do it. Well, sometimes you have to say it's not going to do it because it's wrong, because it doesn't honor God. What we need are people who fear God. And until we have people who fear God at every level of our society, why, we will continue on this downward spiral from which there will be eventually no recovery. And America, this city on the hill that we've talked about, the beacon of light, the hope of all mankind, will be relegated to the dustbin of history. I'm firmly convinced that we will see God's wrath on America if we do not return to our godly heritage. And I think this is one step along the way. And you know, Dee, my basic feeling talking to people across America, and even reading many of the what I believe are legitimate polls, is that the majority of the American people are good people, and the American majority of our people, oh, we may have different aspects of how we look upon Christianity, but I think the vast majority of the American people consider themselves Christians. even though we may disagree as certain tenets of the faith, they still consider themselves to be Christians. And I think that maybe if we could ever rekindle within those people an understanding of what you have in this book, we would have something to unite together behind.
That's right. The tendency in our nation today is to simply do our own thing. You know, get out of my life, whatever I want to do. If it feels good, do it. Whatever is right in our own eyes, don't mention Jesus. Don't tell me about God. I want to do what I want to do. So we let our daughters have abortions. We tell our public officials whatever they want to do in public life. As long as they do it in private, it's fine. We print magazines. We have nudity, obscenity, entertainment. Television is just absolutely filthy. I'm just absolutely shocked when you channel surf at night to see during prime time. It's absolute filth. Drugs, murder, rape, suicide, satanic themes. Oh, yeah, we just say, well, it's entertainment. And so what we've done is we reap what we sow. We trash God, and then we wonder why our world is going to hell. And that's exactly what's happened. You don't have a ruler or a yardstick that tells you about distances, and therefore whatever distance you want to measure, it's up to you. But we don't have any standards. And many of our soldiers, I know, are godly people and patriotic and doing what's right, and just a few have really hurt us tremendously in the Muslim world.
Well, I think that tragically, this has inflamed the entire Muslim world against us. And of course, the president's remarks, well, gee, we didn't know it was all their fault. We certainly wouldn't have done anything like that. And then the word comes out that they've actually gone to legal experts to get permission to do this sort of thing, and that they've actually brought people to Washington, D.C. to write briefs to say why, of course, if you're considered a terrorist, why you do not have to, you do not have the rights, of the Geneva Convention, or rationalizing, well, our boys are dying, so we have a right to torture them to get information. But a lot of these people just picked up off the streets and didn't know anything at all. But I'm sure they gave a lot of faulty information, to stop the screaming. Well, don't want to get off on another subject. Anyway, Dee, it's been wonderful having you with us. Do you have any parting thoughts for our listeners?
Well, remember, it's our turn now to provide the stepping stones for such a great work of advancing the faith of those that follow behind us. And so I want to say God bless your listeners. And God bless you and your family and this program, because we need leaders, people that will come forward in this country. There are lapdog Christians that just lay around and don't do anything. There are barking Christians that bark every now and then, make a little noise, and then there's biting Christians that clamp and hang on and accomplish something and teach and write books and run for public office and get involved in political races. And I hope we've got some biting Christians out there in your listening area.
Well, I hope we have. In fact, this program's heard all across America on, I think, 10 or 11 stations this evening. So I hope that we'll get a lot of people give serious consideration to joining us in this epic struggle to determine whether this nation or any nation conceived under God can long endure. Well, anyway, thanks very much, Dee. I really appreciate you being with us, and I think you've done a wonderful job. Again, the book, The Myth of Separation Between Church and State. Dee Wampler, if you'd like to know more, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Good night, and God bless you. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind all of our listeners that Radio Liberty really is listener-supported, primarily supported by people who believe in our objective, and that is to educate people about the spiritual nature of the forces that are aligned against God. If you read the scriptures, you'll find, whether it be Ezekiel 11:9 or Jeremiah 11:9 or Ezekiel 22:25, there is a conspiracy against God. It's always been a conspiracy against God. And that conspiracy against God is the major motivation behind everything going on today. If you don't like the word conspiracy, why, you don't like the Bible, because the Bible describes conspiracies. They've always existed, so why is it that most people shy away from it here or ridicule the idea? Well, very simply, somebody has controlled their minds. If you read the scriptures, they talk about the conspiracy against God, and that's what this is really about. So if you agree that there is a problem and you'd like to become part of our effort, and 5 hours every day by radio, by shortwave, by satellite, by internet, we're reaching people all across the country. We have well over 1,000 people every day listen to our internet programs, and of course we have our programs 5 hours a day on the internet. We have our programs 4 hours a day on shortwave, and of course you need to get the frequencies. Well, you can either go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Or you can give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Your job out there is to tell others about our programs, to pull down our newsletters, and of course, copy them and distribute them. We hope that if you like a free copy of our newsletter, our latest newsletter deals with the events that were leading up to 9/11, that you realize that on at least 11 separate occasions why the FBI, pardon me, the CIA could have captured Osama bin Laden or killed him, and that according to Bill Clinton last night on 60 Minutes, he said, "I gave the order twice to kill Osama bin Laden, and the CIA wouldn't do it." Why wouldn't they do it? And then why didn't we try to capture him when we sent our troops in October of the year 2001? Well, I think you'll understand why we didn't try to kill Osama bin Laden when you read my latest newsletter. That's the May-June newsletter. We'll be glad to send you a free copy. If you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then, of course, we hope many of you will be interested in getting a copy of this very excellent book, The Myth of Separation Between Church and State. We carry a number of other excellent books. One of them is America's God and Country. That's actually almost 900 pages, written by a good friend, Bill Federer, who's from Missouri. He's running for Dick Gephardt's congressional seat down there, and I hope he's going to get it this time. We hope, of course, that you'll want to get Tim LaHaye's, Faith of Our Founding Fathers. We have a four-tape set, The Foundations of Our Freedom. David Barton's excellent book, Original Intent. So that's Original Intent by David Barton, The Faith of Our Founding Fathers by Tim LaHaye, The America's God and Country, The Abandonment Theology by John Chalfont. Abandonment Theology, the church has abandoned America. Because the church, unfortunately, the seminaries were infiltrated 50 years ago to change the thrust of our ministries away from being involved in society at all to simply preaching the gospel. And then, of course, gradually now we're changing the gospel. We're changing the music and the message of the church. That's why you need to get our video diapracts in the church, our four-tape set on the church growth movement. You need to get so much material that Radio Liberty has. And probably the best thing would be Brotherhood of Darkness. That's Brotherhood of Darkness. But under any circumstances, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. It's 1-800-544-8927, and we'll be glad to send you a free copy of our newsletter. We'll be glad to send you a list of the various items we have. Go to our website at radioliberty.com. Tell others about our website. Tell them about our programs, our shortwave programs. Pray for America. And please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And so if you'd like to give us a call, again, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But right now we ask you to hold your calls. We have with us on the line John Spring. And John has his own radio program in Southern California. He's heard there every Sunday evening. And he's kind enough to have me on as a guest regularly. John is a geographer, and he's done a lot of study on geopolitics. And, of course, geographers many times have been advisors to governments, because the geography of a nation, and that has to do with the natural resources as well as the political situation, is important in consideration of a policy towards specific areas of the world. And, of course, John has friends in Afghanistan who have been working with the Afghan government in the past, and he has got a pretty good grasp of what's going on in the world today. Now, the average American really doesn't understand that prior to 25 years ago, there was no Islamic radical movement. The world, there were a few Wahhabi clerics in Saudi Arabia. There was the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. There were the Ayatollahs, the radical Ayatollahs there in Iran and Iraq, and a few small Islamic terrorist organizations. But there was no serious threat from Islamic terrorism anywhere in the world until the United States intervened, toppled the Shah of Iran, and brought the Ayatollah Khomeini to power and his radical Islamic regime. Now, at the time, I questioned why we would have done anything that stupid. Why would we topple a friend of America who had the sixth largest army in the world, who was the barrier to a Soviet advance into the Middle East? Why would we topple him and intentionally bring a radical Islamic regime to power? Didn't make sense at the time. 25 years later, as we look back, if you wanted to create the best enemy our money could buy, there's no better way than to have brought the Ayatollah Khomeini to power. And then it was later that year, 1979, in June or July of that year, when Zbigniew Brzezinski, of course, is very close to David Rockefeller, who created the Trilateral Commission, and their logo is three intertwining sixes. Well, just coincidence, I'm sure. Zbigniew Brzezinski convinced President Carter, who was also a member of the Trilateral Commission dedicated to world government, that we could actually begin financing the Mujahideen, the holy warriors in Afghanistan, who opposed the puppet Soviet regime in Kabul, which we did. And, of course, Brzezinski did this intentionally, and he admitted this 10 years later, to precipitate the Soviet invasion, and then we had a war. And then, of course, we could begin to push this radical Islamic regime, recruit Muslim warriors from all over the world, and tell them this was Allah's war. This was a religious war. Allah was going to give them victory over the infidels, passing out Qurans. The CIA is printing Qurans. The USAID is printing textbooks, pushing this radical Islamic fundamentalist belief that advocates killing the infidels. Why would we do something that stupid unintentionally? Well, of course, we wanted to do that so we could win the war. Well, they won the war because we gave them the military equipment that eventually led the Soviets to sign a peace agreement in 1988 and pull their troops out in 1989. And people will tell you, well, at that point, the CIA withdrew support from the radical Islamic movement, which we had fostered. And if you believe that, you don't know anything about history. We financed and helped the Al-Qaeda movement in Bosnia in 1994. 3, 4, 5, and in Kosovo in 1988 and 1999. We financed this Al-Qaeda movement, and this is covered in a book called Dollars for Terror. And, of course, Osama bin Laden repeatedly was issuing declarations of war on America and killing Americans. And he was involved, along with, of course, Khomeini's regime, in so many of the various terrorist attacks, certainly the bombing of the World Trade Center in 1993, and then the Black Hawk Down incident in October of 1993. And then, of course, the working with the Iranians and the bombing in Riyadh in 1995 and the Khobar Towers in 1996 and the machine gun of the tourists in 1997 and the bombing of the U.S. embassies in Tanzania and Kenya in 1998 and the bombing of the USS Cole in the year 2000 and time again why the CIA could have captured or killed him, and they refused to do it. If you listen to Bill Clinton last night, he told you that on at least two occasions he had given orders to the CIA to kill Osama bin Laden. And that's covered in Dick Clark's, Richard Clark's excellent book, Against All Enemies. And he commented he never understood why we never tried to get Osama bin Laden. Or maybe that would have been counterproductive. After all, we'd invested a lot of money in creating the best enemies money could buy. And with that as the background, why, John, tell us a little bit about, because you've been doing some studying about the relationship between the Chinese communists and helping to finance this Islamic terrorist movement. Do you want to pick up the story from there?
Yes, I will, Dr. Stan. I just thought I might make one comment, and that is, to the best of my knowledge, the first fanatical Islamic movement took place in the southern Philippine Islands. And this is one reason why, of course, it was very unpopular, but President Ferdinand Marcos established martial law for a period of several decades, which became his dictatorship because he felt that so much stability, politically speaking, in Manila was needed to thwart the insurgency of the Abu Sayyaf, which actually occurred much earlier. But it took quite a while for our intelligence agencies to recognize that these were not the same people that we had fought years earlier in the southern Philippine Islands, but rather these were people who were trained and brought in to some extent from the Middle East and financed by Saudi Arabia and Libya and other oil-rich nations of the Middle East. And having made that comment, I just thought I would share a few things with you, Dr. Stan, and your audience, which might be of some interest. In 1980, I was honored to attend the International Geographical Congress held in Tokyo, Japan, in August of that year, to present a paper. And during my stay in Japan, I had an opportunity to also travel with some of my Japanese friends who were quite prominent in some of the multinational corporations there. And during our travels, we visited a school which was designed to teach many skills, but the most prominent skills in demand at that time were basically introduction to the Chinese language. This was back in 1980, and there was a great demand for businessmen and technicians to learn how to speak Chinese fluently as well as to write the Mandarin language. And during the conferences, which I attended back in Tokyo a few days later, I met my counterparts from all over the world, the former Soviet Union, most of the European nations, a few from African nations, a few from the Middle East, and also there were a few geographers from China. Now, within a matter of moments, I could say that most of the geographers from China at that time were still somewhat inexperienced in terms of geopolitical matters. They were sort of the novices at that time. But I'm almost positive that within the next decade, they made significant progress with their tutoring from geographers from Moscow and other Marxist nations of Eastern Europe. Now, the reason that I bring this to your attention is because,
As you pointed out earlier in your broadcast, geographers generally plan the strategic policies for external affairs as well as within Marxist nations the internal affairs of a nation. And the external affairs or the geopolitical affairs, those are what I'm concerned about. And you have to understand that during this period of the 80s, it was rather significant. This was the economic rebirth of China with the special economic zones, which had been designated by the Chinese government to allow large multinational corporations from the United States, Japan, and Europe to set up base along the coastal areas controlled very tightly by the Chinese, so that the Chinese government could control which Chinese nationals were allowed to work at these facilities, to be trained, and of course learn the technology, and later on manage and control these corporate factories. And of course this added a lot to the Chinese economy. Meanwhile, there was a lot of trading done with the Middle East, primarily in the area of war material, missiles, weapons of mass destruction, some military vessels, and conventional military machinery as well, which was sent to the Middle East. Now, in this period of years, things were coming along fairly well from the Chinese perspective. Now, during the Clinton administration, you may recall, Dr. Stan, that the Chinese embassy in Belgrade, Yugoslavia, or Serbia, as it was then called by us, was bombed by NATO forces. In reality, these were American bombers that that hit the Chinese embassy, and we alleged, of course, that this was an accident on our part. But the Chinese never accepted our excuses, and they were very upset, far more upset than was ever divulged in the Western press, to us at least. One other thing that we need to understand about the Chinese, Dr. Stan, is that in their rationale, in their mentality, in their frame of mind, if a person does something offensive to them, they must be repaid at least tenfold, if not a hundredfold. And in modern times, I would say 100-fold is closer to the type of retaliation that they look at. Now, after that happened, of course, there was an incident off of China's coast with one of our surveillance aircraft. One of the EP-3s was forced to land on Hainan Island, and we assumed that that was an emergency landing, and that was something that was never ever reported accurately here in the West. But our aircraft, our surveillance aircraft, was forced to land on that island, and at that time, of course, George W.'s uncle, Prescott Bush, was in China.
Wait a minute. No, that would not be Prescott. Prescott, I think, is dead. It would be, you're speaking, his grandfather was Prescott. His father is George Herbert Walker. So who was in China?
George Herbert Walker's
okay.
brother.
His brother, okay.
Which I thought had the name Prescott.
And maybe he was. Maybe he was married, named after the grandfather. It was Prescott.
Very possibly. If he's George Herbert Walker's senior, that's very possible. So, not too much was tied between the bombing of the U.S. Embassy and the EP-3, but the EP-3, from their rationale, certainly would not have equivocated to the deed that we had committed from their standpoint of the bombing of their embassy in Belgrade. It's very interesting to note that prior to 9/11, Iran had several summit meetings within Tehran, and there were certain treaties between Iran and Syria, Iran and Iraq, Iran and Sudan, and of course many of the other Islamic nations were invited to attend and to also come on board with this Islamic jihadist type of solidarity.
And I think that Osama bin Laden certainly was not at all adverse. He was a Sunni Muslim, the others are Shia Muslims. But the common hatred of the West, that Osama bin Laden was not at all adverse to working with the Khomeini's government, which created both of them. In fact, as much was said as suggesting that one of Osama bin Laden's sons was hiding in Iran afterwards. The idea that there is a barrier between them, I think, is simply put out to confuse the American people so they cannot see this united Islamic front, united against America and growing as everything we do antagonizes the Islamic world all the more. And I really believe anybody who wants to understand what's going on must read Samuel Huntington's excellent book, The Clash of Civilizations, where he tells, you know, if you really want to get a war going, why attack over there in the Middle East, try to impose your values on them, your democracy, and when you do, why you'll get this kin relationship, you'll get the Muslim countries from all over the world to come against you. And that's exactly what we're doing. It's not that other than our leaders don't understand. The book is certainly praised by Zbigniew Brzezinski, by Henry Kissinger, parts of this ruling group that rule our country from behind the scenes, whether the Democrats or Republicans are in power. And we're doing everything we can to foment World War III, but we can't tell the American people that. We've got to think this all has to do with what happened on September 11th.
Yes. Now, before I get to September 11th, and I'm glad you brought up the Shias and the Sunnis, because even though most of Iran is predominantly Shia Muslim, and such nations as Syria, for example, and the Sudan are predominantly a Sunni, there was great unity at this meeting. And as you pointed out, the common enemy, of course, was Israel and its closest ally, the United States. And during this time period, we have to also understand that Iran, which was a terrorist sponsoring state, which had already committed several atrocities towards the West, including the United States, through Hezbollah, the Party of God, which took credit for the bombing of the U.S. Embassy in Beirut and later the U.S. Marine Barracks in Beirut, Lebanon. And even surprisingly, they have taken credit for TWA Flight 800, which of course is very controversial here in the States, and we'll never probably believe that there was anything related to a terrorist operation.
Well, I don't know why not. There were at least 200 people who saw the missile sweeping into the sky, and the government lied because it was not yet time for this war with terrorism. They specifically withheld that information, like they held the terrorist connection to the bombing of the Oklahoma City Murrah building, because it's almost as if they're following a script. They lied to us about the Islamic connection to certainly Timothy McVeigh. They lied, denied. In fact, there's probably not one in 10,000 Americans who know that the Islamic radicals took credit for bringing down TWA 800. Why was that never mentioned in America? They said, we did it. And we said, oh, no, you didn't. It was an explosion in the fuel tank. And totally ignore the 200 witnesses. We just won't let them appear before the National Traffic Safety Board. You see, they lied to the American people. Had we known what was going on, the people would demand we did something earlier. But there's a script they're following. They know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the American people to know. Well, and if you want to document what I'm saying, the TWA connection, Yosef Bodansky's book, Bin Laden, The Man Who Declared War Through America, available through Radio Liberty.
An excellent source.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is John Spring. John, go ahead and pick up the story there. We've got a few of our listeners now are going to be listening to the commercial ads, but why don't you go ahead and pick up the story?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Yosef Bodansky's book, Bin Laden, The Man Who Declared War on America. It's an outstanding book. I've had the opportunity to read it as well. And his latest book, which I have just received today, is called The Secret History of the Iraq War. The Secret History of the Iraq War. And I hope you're able to have him as a guest.
I already have him scheduled, so he'll be coming on to our program. For our listeners out there, Yosef Bodansky is the director of the Republican Congressional Task Force on Terrorism and Unconventional Warfare. He's been working back at Washington, D.C. for well over a decade, probably for 20 years, and he has access to all sorts of intelligence information. His book, starting with Attack America in the West and The Man Who Declared War Against America, and then, of course, The High Cost of Peace, I think, was the third one. I could be corrected on that. And then his latest one, The Secret History of the War with Iraq or the Iraqi War. We'll be interviewing him very, very soon on that. So you will get information from him you'll never get from the controlled media here in America. And, of course, we'll be bringing that to you here at Radio Liberty.
Yes. And I was going to mention to your audience, especially those who are able to pick us up here in Southern California. This coming Sunday at 4 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, I'm having Yosef Bodansky as my guest on my program Sound Off with John W. Spring, which airs at 4 p.m. on KSPA, which is 1510 on the AM dial. And I would encourage all of the listeners who hear your program to tune into my program for this special opportunity to hear Yosef Bodansky. And then perhaps you might even want to call into our station. Our toll-free number on our radio program is 1-866-584-3434. Now, the reason I mention this number, there might be a few of you who are outside of our listening area, and you could monitor a portion of our program by calling that number, again, which is 1-866-584-3434. Now, the reason that I was mentioning Iran a moment ago and the government of Tehran is because we need to also understand, Dr. Stan, that during the same period of time, China and, of course, Russia, through the earlier auspices of Yevgeny Primakov, one of the most outstanding agents that Moscow ever sent into the Middle East, was very effective in bringing Russian technology and Russian material, military weaponry into Tehran. And later, of course, the Chinese, the North Koreans, and the Pakistanis also have improved the military power of Iran. Now, what is significant about this is that China has been playing a very significant role in its military assistance to Tehran, and it has been doing so for the past two decades in a very effective manner. And it's believed now that Iran, the government in Tehran, currently has long-range missiles with nuclear warheads capable of carrying nuclear warheads to a distance of approximately 3,000 miles, which is rather significant for a nation in the Middle East at this time.
Well, they could then hit most of Europe with those.
Yes.
And I think it's so important that Tehran, the Iranians are getting their missiles, you know, from communist China, supposedly from North Korea, but of course North Korea is simply a surrogate for both Russia and communist China, so that you can't blame them just because they're giving this missile technology. Where do you think that little North Korea that can't even feed its own people, can't even grow enough food, if we weren't helping them, the people would starve to death and rise up, the army would rise up and overthrow the cruel and ruthless dictator there. We're keeping the cruel and ruthless dictator in power. There's something wrong with the picture.
Yes. But even with pathetic North Korea, we have to realistically understand at this time that Pyongyang has the capacity now to manufacture 50 plutonium bombs and one uranium bomb per year. And although currently North Korea just has the capacity to hit the western coast of North America, the west coast of North America, by the year 2005, North Korea should have long-range missiles capable of being able to hit any city throughout the United States, just as China currently does.
But of course, John, they're getting their technology from China, and China's getting their technology from the United States. And anybody out there in the listening audience who honestly believe that Bill Clinton gave the Chinese communists our technology for a couple of $100,000 in campaign contributions, well, you're incredibly naive. We have intentionally and built and purposely and maliciously built up the best enemies money could buy. This is the frightening thing. We gave the technology to Communist China, knowing full well that they were going to give it to North Korea, and now they're building weapons that threaten us, as does Communist China, as does Communist Russia. And if you don't believe Russia is still communist, why, of course, you probably don't believe that China is communist either.
Yes. Now, during this time period of military buildup and technology exchanges with Tehran, with the aforementioned nations of North Korea, China, Russia, and Pakistan, we need to understand that there has been additional intelligence provided to the Tehran regime as well. And this has been rather significant, and this ties in, Dr. Stan, with those summits that I was referring to that occurred actually several years, starting as early as, I believe, 1999 in Tehran with nations such as Syria, Iraq, and the Sudan. And those were very significant meetings because they built up sort of an Islamic solidarity of the Sunni and Shias to the point whereby they were ready to go to war against Israel and the United States. And they were also, of course, through Hezbollah and other terrorist organizations supporting terrorist operations that could occur within the United States. Now, what we need to understand is that even though Osama bin Laden is the most conspicuous terrorist, that we do not know how competent or how accurate our intelligence gathering agencies actually have been. For example, Dr. Stan, even just a few days prior to 9/11, there were several Arabic newspapers in London which contained warnings to the West, and in particular the United States, but none of the American embassy staff in London could read or understand Arabic, so these had to be sent to Washington, and then at the State or the State Department, there were only about three who could translate these Arabic newspapers into English.
John, I do not believe that that our intelligence is that stupid. I think they want to make us believe they're that stupid. They had doubled the budget from 1995 up until the year 2001 for counterterrorism. We were monitoring everything they were doing. We knew who all the terrorists were. None of these terrorists were stopped that morning. They were on the watch list, the terrorist watch list. And knowing full well there was going to be an attack, we let them get onto the plane. Why would you do something that stupid? The Israelis had told us there was going to be an attack. Putin had told us, the German intelligence, the Moroccan intelligence. And they'd all said they're going to attack the United States. There were 11 different countries that said they were going to attack the United States. And you know what happened? The FBI and CIA said, oh no, the attack's going to be overseas. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is John Spring. And they're trying to give us the idea that they're totally incompetent. The whole plan was laid out, and you can pull it down off the Internet. It's the National Commission on Terrorism, and it was either January of the year 2000 or January of 2001. It was the Bremer Committee report, and it opens... the whole issue is about the coming terrorist attacks on the United States, but it opens with a discussion of Pearl Harbor, and the only reason that Pearl Harbor took place was because... everybody in the United States was just so confused, and people didn't talk to one another, and people were afraid to do what was right, and it was exactly the line that they've given us ever since, that it was totally incompetent. They knew it was going to be on September 11th because somebody warned why Mayor Willie Brown the night before, and then somebody, and the only people who would have the power to do this would be the CIA, pull that article out of the San Francisco Chronicle that was running in the early morning edition on the 12th, pull that out, and it was never seen again. They pulled it down off the Internet. Who would have the power to order the San Francisco Chronicle to pull that very important article that said there was prior knowledge that Mayor Willie Brown was cautioned not to be flying on the 12th of September? And the same thing happened with Salman Rushdie's article. And, of course, there were two articles in the Newsweek magazine. And the editor of Newsweek refuses to talk about that. How could that possibly be? Why can't they talk? Somebody gave them orders not to talk. I think they knew exactly what was going to happen. Sybil Edmonds, worked for the FBI, had interpreted all of the messages they'd received. She's under a federal indictment saying she cannot talk to anybody about what she knows. If there's nothing to conceal, John, why are they concealing it? Why did the administration oppose the first investigation and this investigation? And after all of the censored material that they've given them, now the CIA is going to censor at least a third of the commission's report. Do you really think we're getting the truth? Do you really think they're incompetent, or are they creating that impression?
Well, I concur with you, Dr. Stan. They are creating that impression. We know now through other sources that the Israelis attempted to warn the U.S. because they intercepted a phone call from Osama bin Laden made to his mother, indicating to her that he would be unable to attend a family function because he had some pressing matters that he had to attend to over in Afghanistan at that time. Now, it's interesting to note with respect to Afghanistan that on the day of 9/11, one of the largest Chinese contingents landed at Kabul airport to meet with the Taliban. And this is one thing that has never been mentioned out in the West.
Hold that thought for just a minute. We're going to pull all of our stations back on board right now. Okay, Dr. Stan, our guest this evening is John Spring, and he's talking about on the very day before the September 11th attack, a very large component or contingent of Chinese communists landed in Kabul to meet with the Taliban. What nobody here wants to mention is that we financed the Taliban. We started financing them back in 1994. We were the largest source of foreign aid for the Taliban. We called it humanitarian aid, but that's what kept them in power, so that they could spend their money on their military rather than having to feed the people. Why were we funding this wicked regime that oppressed women and chopped off people's heads and arms and feet? Or maybe we were creating the best enemy that American taxpayer dollar could buy. But anyway, the Chinese communists are coming to meet them the day before the September 11th attack. And what was that all about, John?
Well, from what little knowledge I know about that meeting at this time, it appears that they wanted to establish closer ties with the Islamists who were really running the government of Afghanistan, if you can call it a government at that time. And they wanted to more or less establish agreements with the Taliban so that they could benefit militarily. You see, China had already established very close ties with neighboring Iran to the west, and the timing of this was very significant because they knew full well at this time that the U.S. Interests would be bombed on 9/11, the Twin Towers and the Pentagon, and psychologically speaking, this was a very impressive time to have their meeting begin with the Taliban, which was looked upon as one of the factions to be dealt with in the Middle East at that time. Now, we need to also understand that if I can envision how my counterparts would be operating in Beijing, that they would do everything in their power to recruit nations and groups from other countries to more or less do what they would like to do, but knowing full well that if they did such acts of retaliation themselves, that this would mean a declaration of war against the People's Republic of China.
You're talking about China retaliating against America for
yes.
the bombing of the embassy, which they'd never forgiven us for. So, but, you know, of course, the other thing is that China needs the oil that is there in the Middle East. In fact, there are many people who say that we've really went to war in the Middle East because, of course, if we weren't there, why, there would be a vacuum and China would invade. So one reason that we really went in, we can't tell the American people this, but it was all geopolitics. We went in so that the Chinese would not be justified in moving in and seizing the war there in the Caspian, pardon me, the oil in the Caspian Basin. Have you heard that?
Well, there is a certain amount of truth to that, Dr. Stan. Most of the American oil companies had invested quite heavily in the oil fields of the Caspian Aral Basin. In fact, I might even go back a few steps by saying that the main reason why we decided to go up against Milosevic in Yugoslavia was due to the fact that we wanted to assure our European brethren that they would have a clear-cut artery from the Caspian Aral Basin to the European market.
You're really talking about an oil pipeline that was to come through Yugoslavia, because
yes.
people don't understand how important these pipelines are. If you don't have the pipelines, you can't bring in either the oil or natural gas. Why, then, of course, the economies of the world are crippled. So that was one reason, of course, for wanting to destroy Milosevic. Not that he wasn't a corrupt communist, because he was, always had been. But, of course, that's why we favored the Islamic, the Al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden's terrorists there in
yes.
Kosovo. But the American people never understood that the Kosovo Liberation Front was Al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden. So why in 1998 and 1999 were we backing the wicked Osama bin Laden? Nobody ever wants to ask those questions. Because, of course, the answers are too hard to accept.
Well, because primarily of the Danube Corridor, we wanted to make sure that there would be unlimited flow of oil by either oil tankers and then later on an oil pipeline that would run parallel to the Danube River to the European market. Millions and billions of dollars were invested by American companies such as Chevron in the Southeast Asian, the Central Asian oil fields, which are just north of the Middle East. We're talking about the Caspian Sea on both shores, but mainly on the side of Kazakhstan and Turkmenistan and Uzbekistan on the eastern shores of the Caspian. This was the area that had the most recent proven reserves of petroleum and natural gas. But unless they could get this to a viable market, it would not be of any value to Chevron and British Petroleum and Mobil and Royal Dutch Shell and all the other oil cartels of the world.
And of course the Taliban would not give them the permission to build the oil pipeline across Afghanistan because they feared that the Western influence there would come out against the regime. And of course, the logical place was from the Caspian Basin through Turkmenistan, I think is the one it is. Anyway, down through Afghanistan, through
yes.
Pakistan, down and of course into the Arabian Ocean.
Yes. Now,
Arabian Sea.
Now, Unocal Oil, the Union Oil Company of decided to send the Union Oil Company of California, sometimes known as Union 76 or Unocal. They sent Hamid Karzai to negotiate with the Taliban so that hopefully they would be able to have the rights for a oil pipeline route going through western Afghanistan to the Arabian Sea through a port in Pakistan. When the Taliban did not agree, it was said, according to some French reporters, that U.S. officials said, we were willing to provide you carpets of gold, but instead, for your reluctance, we're going to provide you with carpets of bombs.
I think it will line your streets with gold or carpet bombs. That's a book called The Forbidden Truth, which we do carry, an excellent book. The Forbidden Truth, where they actually quote a Pakistani a foreign minister or a high official who had been at the meeting when the Americans had made that note, and this was in June or July of the year 2001, just a couple of months before the September 11th bombing, saying to the Afghan officials, you either give us the right of way across your country, you line your streets with gold, or we'll align them with carpet bombs. Which do you want? And the Taliban are quite irrational. I mean, their religion is their whole life, and they really feared that the Westerners would come in and corrupt their society. They wanted this to be a pure Islamic society under Sharia law, and they would not negotiate, no matter how much money we offered them. And that sealed their fate. Because we did not go into Afghanistan to catch Osama bin Laden. Had we done that, why, we failed miserably. No, we didn't go in to get Osama bin Laden. We didn't go in to wipe out al-Qaeda. We went in there, of course, to, first of all, to so we can get the oil pipeline through, and secondly, so that we could justify going to war with Iraq, because this is what it was all about. You had to have an excuse somehow to get the American people to be willing to go to war.
Yes.
The American people on the 10th of September of 2001 didn't want to go to war. By the 12th of September, they were ready to go to war, and we were told we had lost 6,000 Americans. And then it was 5,000 Americans, and then it was 4,000 Americans, and then, mercifully, it was 3,000 Americans. But everything has been done to keep the American people from knowing what happened on September 11th. The Bush administration opposed the Intelligence Committee report. They opposed this report. They are censoring this report, so none of the truth will come out. Almost everybody on that commission was handpicked by the Bush administration, and the families realize that they've been betrayed. Everything is being done to keep the truth from coming out. And what is the truth? Why, we knew the attack was coming. Somebody had bought up most of the seats on those planes. And, of course, in the staff report on the 9/11 Commission, they say, well, we know that the Islamic terrorists didn't buy up the seats on those planes. So if the Islamic terrorists didn't buy up the seats on the planes, who bought up all the seats on the planes, because each plane was only a quarter full? Who had the money to buy up the seats on the planes so that there would not be so many people there who could rush the Islamic terrorists, the hijackers? Who had the money to do that? Who was it who shorted the stock for United Airlines and the American Airlines? And, of course, they said, well, we've investigated here in the United States. It was perfectly normal. But we're talking about what happened in Europe and in Germany and in France on their stock markets. And, of course, there's strong ties to the Central Intelligence Agency. And it was the Central Intelligence Agency that had dozens, at least a dozen opportunities to kill Osama bin Laden, and consistently refused to do it. And I hope many of you want to get our May-June newsletter. We'll be glad to send that to you free of charge. My May-June letter, just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Well, John, you're talking about the Chinese coming the day before the 9/11 attack to establish a relationship with the Taliban, because they're hoping maybe they can move in there and begin having more influence. Do you think they're after the oil, as well as, of course, retaliation against America?
Well, I think it was definitely retaliation against America. But at the same time, since we were speaking a moment ago about the Caspian oil fields, we should mention that currently underway is one of the longest pipeline routes in the world, going from basically the Caspian Aral Basin to China proper. It's one of the largest undertakings, and it's going on right now for the benefit of Chinese military.
Who's building it?
It's been being built in part by Chevron.
Isn't that nice? Of course, why should we be surprised? Chevron's been supporting the communist government in Angola for years because, well, politics is politics, but business is business.
Yes.
In fact, during the Reagan administration, Chevron was supporting the communists, and the United States was supporting the anti-communists. It's amazing how the game is played.
Yes. I was just going to make one brief comment. Back in 1960, I was assigned the duty of chartering an aircraft for a Coast Guard contingent, and the bill was quite expensive. We're looking now at thousands upon thousands of dollars to finance the chartering, basically for all practical purposes of these airliners, and that means that they had to come up with a lot of capital or cash from some source, and for it to be coordinated would strongly suggest that there were some very deep and very wealthy pockets that provided that source of money for those tickets.
But remember who's funding communist China today. America is subsidizing our corporations to move to China. Why would we do something that foolish unintentionally? America, they can get, our corporations can get money from the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund and all sorts of loans to build over there. And we give them special tax breaks when they build over there. And then they can bring their products that they manufacture there into the United States with no tariff on them. Why are we building up communist China? And I think that David Rockefeller said it best in an article in the New York Times in August of 1973, and it's quoted in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and certainly in Dr. Dennis Cuddy's excellent book, Secret Records Revealed, both of which we carry. That's Brotherhood of Darkness and Secret Records Revealed. But David Rockefeller has just come back from communist China. They've killed 60 to 80 million people there, solidifying their revolution. And David Rockefeller says the social experiment in China under Chairman Mao is one of the most important and successful in history. The social experiment in communist China is among the most successful and important in history. It's all a social experiment. How the elitists can manipulate the economies and the people of the world as we move towards the New World Order, the New World Religion. And so where's the money coming from for communist China? It's coming from the great banks of the West. They were talking about recently something that nations of the world are investing something like $500 billion in China. They're building up whole new cities. I mean, there are thousands of industries moving in there. China will, and later India, of course, and probably Russia, will become the major industrial centers of the world as industry moves out of the United States, as we move from a first world to a second world nation. It's all happening not by accident. Our leaders know exactly what they're doing. They're redistributing our wealth to other nations, as it says in the Earth Charter. If you haven't read the Earth Charter, you need to get it. We'll be glad to provide it for you. It's written by the most powerful communist in the world. His name is Mikhail Gorbachev, right along with Stephen Rockefeller and Maurice Strong.
Yes.
Three people dedicated to this idea of a new world order under the control of a ruling elite. That's the Earth Charter. It's housed, the original copy, in the Ark of Hope, the occult, satanic counterpart of the Ark of the Covenant. If you'd like to get a copy of the Earth Charter, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Don't scoff at these things. Check them out. Find out if it could really be true. Why is Mikhail Gorbachev, the former dictator of Russia, working with Maurice Strong, a multi-billionaire, and Stephen Rockefeller, who will probably lead the Rockefeller clan when David Rockefeller goes to his just rewards very soon, because he's almost in his late 80s. Well, you have to understand, they're all bound together because they are all deeply involved in the occult. And their goal is a new world order, a new world religion under a ruling elite. They're part of the spiritual hierarchy that rules the world. And when you understand that, why you can understand what's going on. If you don't believe there's a spiritual hierarchy that rules the world, just give us a call. We'll send you something that they have put out. And who put it out? Why, it's distributed by the Lucis Trust. It used to be the Lucifer Publishing House, but, of course, most people don't believe in Lucifer anymore. But these people do. They worship him. We'll be right back. Go ahead, John.
Well, Dr. Stan, there was one thing during the 9/11 Commission that I thought was rather an outstanding statement. It was made by Dr. Condoleezza Rice. She made the statement that we were planning, the United States, that is, government, was planning an invasion of Afghanistan prior to 9/11. We were arming the Uzbeki people in Uzbekistan.
And the Northern Alliance, too.
And the Northern Alliance there. And for some reason, people don't understand that this invasion into Afghanistan to go against the Taliban was planned well in advance of 9/11, as, of course, was also our invasion plans for Iraq. Now, keeping that in mind, to this day, I really doubt that we are going after the true culprits. We might be going after some of the people such as Osama bin Laden, who might be working on behalf of China. And you have to understand, Dr. Stan, that years, if not decades, prior to 9/11, Osama bin Laden made many visits to China. And for some reason, the people in the West who write the newspapers and report the news seemingly are unaware of this, just as they're unaware of his a few visits to the Philippine Islands to assist in bringing about and building up Abu Saif, the terrorist operation in the Philippines. So this man has traveled quite widely, and he's had very close ties with the Chinese for quite some period of time, and I wouldn't be at all surprised if someday we may uncover the fact that China played a very significant role in the terrorist operations of 9/11.
Well, of course, we know that the Muslims have been working very closely with the communists. We know that in 1982, of why Iran and Syria and the PLO and Libya all sent representatives to a meeting, an international conference was sponsored by the Soviets in Libya. It was all part of this world revolutionary movement. Much of the training initially for Khomeini's people came from the Soviet Union and from the Chinese communists. But they can't tell the American people that, because aren't they our enemies? Pardon me, aren't they our allies? And how could we justify continuing to fund massive amounts of money into Russia under one guise or another, and massive amounts of money to China under one guise or another, if they indeed are our enemies and are preparing for war? Unless this whole thing is scripted and there is a force behind what's going on today, a spiritual force which most people are incapable of understanding. But I believe there are dark spiritual forces. They have an agenda, and I think God has given them free rein for the time being. And help us, because I believe he's going to bring his wrath upon our nation. Well, John, we're just about out of time. Would you like to just sort of wrap up your thoughts for this evening? Because we've covered a lot of things, but I certainly agree with you. There is a definite involvement of the Chinese communists with this world Islamic terrorist movement, as well as the Russians with this Islamic terrorist movement. As long as it doesn't, of course, involve attacking their country, they're not at all adverse to supporting it, because, of course, it is a thorn in the side of America. And yet, of course, we're funding Russia. Why would we be doing that? Funding the destruction of their nuclear weapons, funding the destruction of their biological weapons, funding the destruction of their chemical weapons, because they don't have enough money to do it. But they have enough money to build new intercontinental ballistic missiles that are aimed at us, enough money to build new nuclear submarines with their missiles that will be aimed at us.
Yes.
What's wrong with this picture? Go ahead.
Well, Dr. Stan, I think we need to understand that, unlike here in the United States, that Marxist nations and former Marxist nations have relied very heavily upon the discipline of geography for building their geopolitical strategy for world domination. And world domination is going to occur as long as the American people and our allies remain ignorant on the fact that China is working out a very sophisticated geopolitical policy. They are attempting to have other people work on their behalf, just as more recently the Iranians out of Tehran are willing to work with nations such as Argentina and Mexico that may have dissatisfaction with the United States in carrying out terrorist operations here in the United States. I think we need to be very prudent about what will be taking place in the western United States during the next few months. I think there's a very good possibility that if we don't keep up our guard, that there will be terrorist attacks, if not actual nuclear missile attacks on the western United States from foreign sources. But unfortunately, our intelligence agencies have not warned the American people, although the elitists throughout the world currently have known for at least a month and a half, perhaps even longer than that. It's only you and I and 99% of the population of America that is being kept in the dark on this matter.
Dark on what matter?
Regarding the possibility of a massive terrorist operation that would dwarf 9/11, or of a nuclear missile crisis which could take place as well. And we need to be very prudent during these next few months. As I've warned most of my listeners, if you have not taken a first aid course, I urge you to do so as soon as you possibly can, because there will be no ability for you to contact through 9/11 the paramedics or any other emergency services.
Okay, well, we're just about out of time, John. I want to thank you so very much for being with us. It's always interesting. Always appreciate your input.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan, and I hope those who listen in Southern California will listen to our program every Sunday at 4 p.m. on 1510 on the AM dial.
1510 on the AM dial, and of course, that's John Springs. Excellent program, Sunday afternoon. God bless. Bye-bye.
Lord bless you, too.
Okay, fine. Well, that was John, and of course, he always has a great deal of interesting information. I'm very, very concerned that behind everything that's going on are spiritual forces. And, of course, if God is just, I believe his justice cannot sleep forever. I believe America has turned against God, and what would you expect God to do? So pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers. But please remember to keep my ministry, Radio Liberty, in your prayers. Pray for our provision and protection. If you'd like to get a free copy of our newsletter, it's 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And we purchase, it goes into great detail on some of the things that are going on today and the background of the 9/11 attack, a background that you'll never see discussed everywhere. If you'd like to get a copy of our May-June newsletter, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. I want to remind you we'll be having our November 6th annual meeting here in the Monterey Bay area. We have one every year. We'll have some excellent speakers. And if you can get out here for our meeting on the 6th of November this year, why, give us a call, and we'll should be a good time, and you'll get a lot of great information. And then we ask you, of course, to tell others about our program. And so until tomorrow, when we'll be back with you once again here at Radio Liberty, this is Dr. Stan saying goodnight, and may the Lord be with you.